Well, hey there. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today's August 21st, 2018.
Flying by.
That's right. Just a precious little of your summer left. So get out and enjoy yourself. So we're still in the summer recess from Cambridge City Council, but there are a lot of other things happening around town.
I mean, they are meeting for ordinance meetings.
Yeah, committee meetings continue.
Yeah, basically that one, but
Yeah, so, but there are other things. I thought maybe we'd start off just a little bit of things about Envision Cambridge.
Well, you're on the big committee, advisory committee.
I'm on the Envision Cambridge Advisory Committee.
Plus you're on a working group.
And I'm on the Housing Working Group. And actually, I'm going to say with some pride, I went and I was doing a little research on the whole process so far to date and and looked at, pulled all the reports from all the Envision Cambridge meetings, as well as all the housing meetings, all the mobility committee meetings,
etc. And you've been at many, is that what you're going to say?
Well, actually, I'm the only one with a perfect attendance
and
just record.
Just like your voting record, Robert.
Yeah, so anyway, it's interesting. You know, and let me first say the reason why I was looking at the attendance on it is that one of the things I had been noticing is that even though some of these committees have like in the vicinity of about 18 members per committee, that there were some meetings where there were as few as four people.
So what happens if you don't, do you get a certain, like, is there a chair of these groups?
Where the thing is,
say, you know, hey, you haven't shown up in two meetings, you're still interested. Does anyone care?
I don't know that they do.
I think they'll
put the word out to make sure, say, if people have any conflicts, you can't make it. And if a lot of people can't make it, they'll reschedule. That's happened on one or two occasions.
I guess when it's that large, I feel they'll get enough people out, but still.
I mean, the thing is that most of the heavy lifting, honestly, is taking place with UTIL, and even more so.
Yeah, because they're paid the big bucks.
Yeah, with
the advisory.
With the city staff. They're working together with UTIL. And these various working groups, like a mobility working group, there's an environment and...
But that just goes to speak to, some people feel like it's just, you know, lip service then to this community.
You know,
and that's sort of saying, hey, they're not even showing up.
You know, it sometimes might feel that way a little bit, you know, but not always. I think we're heard. Certainly all of the comments that we make
get
through. They're all written up. And there is usually some kind of response by the following meeting.
Okay.
I mean, if you're one outlier, maybe not.
Right.
I speak because I'm sometimes the outlier.
Yeah.
For the most part, I think we get heard. You know, it's not like an Envision Cambridge Advisory Committee is doing the planning.
Well, that's true.
And,
it really is advisory.
Don't vote.
You don't vote. Advisory committees do not vote.
Right.
It's like the recycling.
So. So anyway, I had some concern because, like, for example, on the housing working group, I think there was originally something about 18, but then, you know, you'd be lucky if you had about half of those showing up, people showing up. And they tended to be a problem, and this happens with neighborhood associations and elsewhere in the city, too, where it tends to be sort of self-selection. So you could very much happen, it can happen, it has happened, I think, in the housing working group where you had the representatives from Housing Authority, Justice Start, and Affordable Housing Trust, et cetera, the people you know should be on the committee, but then a lot of the other voices just don't
just
go.
Regular because
citizens. They say, well, you know, if that's just those guys, they're just pushing their agenda and whatever, and people don't show up.
Yeah.
But it's actually important to show up. I mean, I look upon my job on any advisory committee or any city board or commission as being a representative.
Right, and but you are extremely knowledgeable about all the workings, and you're probably not the typical resident citizen.
No, but some of these are...
No, I agree. If you're going to make a commitment, number one, you should... honor it. That's how I feel.
Oh, I very much feel that way.
Just don't say you're going to be part of something if you don't want to be.
So, I mean, I was starting to get a little concerned that, like, the housing working group was starting to...
dwindle.
But it was also kind of, the recommendations that coming out sounded almost like lobbying from one faction.
Okay,
and,
Well,
from the, you know, nonprofit housing group, which is, as we say, they do the Lord's work. But...
Yeah.
The thing is that you really want your representative committee to be basically speaking for a lot of people in the city and not just one particular...
Like property owners, like individual property owners.
Yeah, so it really should just be, everybody should be having some representation on all city boards and commissions, right?
Well, there's they should make sure that happens by who they pick, and if they, yeah. and if they find that that's fallen off, someone should right. take care of it. But
right, you really should have. I mean, I think there were certain people who came and went, like somebody took another job from, I think, on the mobility group. It was somebody who was with an ALY, Transportation Management Agency,
oh.
a TMA, and Transportation Management Authority. I don't know what yeah. it stands for. Somebody took another job, so there was another person appeared. There was never a formal appointment, but there was a replacement.
In other words, to represent that body. Okay.
Yeah, and I think there was an MIT representative on the advisory committee got swapped out as well.
That's true. So they have to then come up to speed or, yeah.
Well, you, or else at least sort of be in the moment when you're at having committee meetings, you know. Okay. So anyway, I felt pretty good about the fact that I thought I hadn't missed any. I really didn't.
So when this was a big meeting last week?
Well, all right, so the advisory committee, the general one, has been dealing with sort of some, they've actually been acting kind of as the working committee for urban form as well as one other interest. But then, the, you know, these other specific matters like ALE life, mobility, environmental, economy, were all kind of farmed out to their own separate working groups, right?
And housing.
And housing, right. So this past week, it was the housing working group, their recommendations, which are sort of meshing together with some of the what's going on at the city council with the proposed affordable housing overlay.
Okay.
They were, the city staff were, and I guess UTL as well, were, you know, working out some scenarios for how such a thing might work.
So they're both approaching it together in a way, or?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is city staff and UTL are kind of working hand in hand in all of this. But the thing is that this was heavily dominated by some of the housing division within the community development department who were, you know, have a certain point of view about some of these things. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was interesting. And I have to say, the proposal, by and large, did not go over well.
Proposal from who?
This is from the housing
working group.
Coupled with the, you know, the general discussion about affordable housing overlay.
Okay.
And there were a number of things that I think caused some concern. And I'll be very upfront, is like I was the first person to speak.
Okay.
And my first comment was, I know that we don't vote on this committee, but if we did, I would not be voting for this.
So who wrote the report up?
I mean, it was really city staff put
so
together
city
these
staff
scenarios
and UTL
together with
had
UTL. Some,
okay.
Right, so they were basically the idea is that right now, if there's a parcel becomes available, the nonprofit housing developers or developers of 100% or nearly 100%
affordable housing get first shot.
Well, no, they don't have first shot.
No, they can't.
But the thing is that, if they turned into a bidding war, they would probably lose.
Of course.
Right, unless it was a parcel that somebody just wasn't interested in for whatever reason. So the idea was, is they're, what I refer to as they're trying to game the economics. So in other words, what they're going to say is, all right, if you're just an ordinary developer and you want to build on a certain lot, then you have to abide by certain restrictions like floor area ratio, height limitations, setbacks.
So is this separate from the inclusionary zoning?
Yes, completely separate.
Because it can be less than 50 units and still apply?
It's just basically...
that only kicks in after 50 units,
honestly,
right?
An affordable housing developer could buy and just build a triple decker if they wanted to.
That's what I'm saying. So what I'm asking is that this would affect anybody doing one unit up to whatever.
Anybody who wanted to do anything anywhere, basically.
So what about the 50 unit plus that already have to deal with inclusionary zoning? Is this on top of that?
That's a separate matter. Yeah, the thing is, that's another separate ordinance.
I understand, but these regulations... All right, I don't understand how they can mandate any of this. So tell me.
Well, we'll see. All right. Okay. So anyway, so what they said, the logic is that economically it doesn't work. It's not feasible to build these sort of housing in, especially in the residential A and residential B, which are traditionally low density zones of the city.
Because you wouldn't get enough units out of it.
If you were to build by this to the same density as any other developer, then the other developer could get more money out of it, so they would bid higher, and then they would be able to make the project very feasible, and you would be left out. And the Affordable Housing Trust simply wouldn't have enough money to go and buy parcels.
So what would ever change that for the affordable?
Well, so this is the gaming of the economics, which is a principle I don't personally agree with.
Well, tell me how it would work.
So for example, they say if you're in a residential B district and you are, and you could have a two-family house, let's say.
Yeah.
And there are certain limitations, like a 0.5 FAR. So you could build a one-story building on half the lot, or a, you know, a three-story building on a sixth of the lot, right? So it's relatively low-density districts. So what they're saying is that you'd have to allow a nonprofit, 100% affordable housing developer, you'd have to give them the freedom to build much more densely.
Who would have to give them?
The city by ordinance. So they would amend the zoning ordinance in order to do this. Now, this is just at the proposal stage. I'm not so sure.
But that's assuming they could even afford to buy it.
Well, the thing is, this is what makes it affordable. So the thing is that if you could build, if an ordinary developer could only build, let's say...
This would not apply to the ordinary developer.
No.
Oh, I see.
So you could only build like a one or two family house,
okay,
right? Or maintain a one or two family house and just build it up a little bit, maybe. But then the other person could come in and build a 10-unit building.
But under these restrictions?
Okay, so let me just give you some numbers.
But who's owning this property? The city?
Whoever the nonprofit housing developer might be. That could be Cambridge Housing Authority.
Original property that they want to
develop. It's somebody, some guy named Joe. He just wants to sell his property.
So would he go to the highest bidder?
He probably would, but the thing is that if the 100% affordable housing developer could bid more because he could
get more profit out of it, then
it becomes, it makes feasible what would otherwise not be feasible.
But then what do the neighbors say about having
where the issue is going to be, okay?
Right. They don't want the same unit thing.
So the thing is, I thought that when they were talking about allowing a little bit of a bonus, that then says, all right, if it's FAR, of 0.5, they let it go up to 0.75 or 0.8. But no.
Is this an example here?
We'll show you here. So they ran the numbers, and they basically said, and again, I hope I'm getting this correct, they said that in a zone where you were allowed a floor area ratio of 0.5, you'd have to give the nonprofit housing developer the right to build to a FAR of about 2.0, about four times the density.
Wow, that's a lot.
And I looked at it and I said, first off, I think that's politically not going to work.
Absolutely.
But I personally have issues with saying, like, if density is good, it should just be good. Or if it's bad, it's bad.
Yeah.
I don't like this idea of saying certain players can do
it. Yeah, but it depends on where the density is.
Yeah. So here's just a little illustration.
What are we looking at here?
All right. So this is, I forget which zone this was in here.
Because there's many maps like this, right?
Yeah. So the thing is what the picture is meant to show here is a neighborhood that has some housing that's actually built to the current floor area ratio.
Yeah, right.
But then it has some other buildings that are bigger than that because they were built prior to the 0.0 FAR restriction.
Like, say, this one here.
So they're trying to make the point that there already are some buildings that are more dense than
unusual.
It would be allowed, so-called non-conforming properties.
Right.
So what their idea here is to allow to build these other non-conforming properties, and then some. So basically, rather than having like a 0.5 FAR, it might be a 2.0 with minimal setbacks. So in other words, you could build almost up to the lot line or a lot closer to the lot line.
Well, in this one, there is some.
Right.
So there's just as much as in the other places, though.
No, actually, there's not. It's a little. Why? I think this one here is illustrating maybe not a strong
front
setback,
right,
but it has lesser
size. Because it says 41% of open space.
Right. Okay, but the thing is, so that's more or less what the idea is.
All
to,
right.
Now the other thing too is that I just basically said, look, whatever acceptable density is should just be acceptable density, and I think there are ideals about affordability and the construction of affordable housing that are noble goals, but the thing is that you shouldn't just throw away every other standard of acceptability for people.
Well, they'd still have to get a special permit, though.
Everything would have to be done with special permit.
Yeah,
but the logic of what they're trying to do, and I think it's a little bit of hocus pocus, is they're saying is, well, we'll do a measure of fit. And what fit means is that if there's already some hotel style building that was built in like 1930 something, which is way in excess of the prevailing zoning, then you would just be allowed to build to that density and more. But then by that logic, then every property really could over time, as it gets sold, then be simply rebuilt to
this much
higher
density. Well,
not if you
have that restriction. It's only for nonprofits though.
Right, so the thing is then what happens then is you're giving it a financial advantage so that as every property goes on the market, then in fact it's more advantageous for the nonprofit developer to build it
well,
as affordable housing.
Well, yes and no, they still need that money from the Affordable Housing Trust. It's
they don't always need it from Affordable Housing Trust. I mean,
I would still think, you know, when units are going for $1 million in two family, you know, they still need a lot of money. So I don't think they'd be overwhelmed by
Well, I think that they were, you know, one person at the committee meeting basically asked the question about, well, what, how many properties are we talking about on a given year, do you think?
Right. That's what I'd
actually,
like to know.
Right. And I don't think they were really clear about
that. I can't imagine more than three or four myself. Just offhand, I'm thinking.
You know, I don't know. And it all depends on the economic conditions. I mean, I think what happened relative to a different issue in Washington, D.C. is that when it was part of that whole discussion about tenants' right of first refusal.
Oh, yeah, right.
And they were, people were quoting how many properties got, you know, purchased by tenants. But it turned out they all happened because it was a recession. So the thing is, recessions do happen.
Well,
so
people are predicting one is coming. So.
Right. So what would happen? Come a recession, then everything changes, and then what? Somebody's estimate of 3 or 4 a year could become, you know, 20 or 30 a year.
I can't see that happening.
Oh, I could see it happening.
Not from nonprofit developers. How many are going on right now? Not counting.
I mean, it depends on what the money source
public housing.
Is.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's actually during recessions, just like with the, during the recession, during the Obama administration, they were doing shovel-ready projects.
Yeah, but that's Obama. We're not talking about Obama now.
I know, but there'll be another Democratic administration at some point, and there will be federal money made available for things that are not currently available down the road.
We don't know.
Right, but the point is zoning, and once you put it in until you change it.
All right, so you predict a lot of pushback.
I think there's going to be a lot of pushback, and it's not just because this is really targeting like the residential A and residential B districts. They didn't even show any images in my type of district, which is like Res C1.
Yeah, why not? Why do you think that is? Which
well,
is, in other words, if you have to border some commercial stuff.
Well, no, the thing is, I'm a business A1 district.
Oh, because you're in like a street.
But housing that would be built in my zone would have to be built to a resident C1 standard, which is 0.75 floor area ratio.
Okay.
And height limits and all that stuff. You know, so anyway, politically I can see this having issues, and it's not just because of the NIMBYism. I think it really is because it's a dramatic change in scale. Like, you know, I went into this meeting thinking that they were talking about giving an advantage from 0.5 to like 0.7.
So you think maybe they should, if they adjusted the the dementia stuff, all that, you think it would be better or not?
I think that
they're just trying to make it a
basically quadrupling the density for one party versus another, to me, is kind of a non-starter.
I mean, to play devil's, I can see why they'd have to do that, because otherwise you're not going to get these nonprofit developers to buy in on it. They wouldn't be able to do it. I think you've got to do it as much, you know, the density as much as they can get away with.
I do have to point out that there are affordable housing projects being constructed today.
Where?
There was the one in Porter Square that Sean Hope and Company put together. There was the one that was over at the old NBC property over by Dickerson Street.
And where did that money come from?
They're leveraging it from various sources. But the thing is, projects are happening. This is just a matter of saying, well, can we accelerate the process? Can we make more projects happen?
So if they're happening, why change things?
Well, that might be a good question to ask.
Because there's a big cry to do it. To have this overlay, which... along with the arts overlay. I don't know.
I don't know how much of a cry there is. I mean, it's laced into all the city council goals about prioritizing the affordability of housing. But the thing is, that's not a blank check that says do anything.
No, but at least, look, they're coming up with something. Please. So then, you know, they get the feedback about it.
Well, they got some feedback, and it was really negative.
So was it a public comment thing, or...?
It was actually
a round table type thing. Or?
Most of the people around the table in the advisory committee were not hot about it.
Okay,
and
so
when
what,
the public chimed in on it, they were pretty solidly not.
So is it more along the line that you were talking about? What it would allow, or what do you think?
Yeah, basically, it was in response to this particular scenarios that they were showing us, and it did not go over very well. There were other ideas expressed, certainly by me, but also by others, to say that, for example, if there are zones, which there are, like residential A, where you can't even have multifamily housing, that should be restricted. That should be lifted.
So residential A, give me an example. Where is our residential A district?
Brattle Street.
Oh. Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
There we go.
Right. Well, that's right. Not the only ones, but the thing is, there are residential.
So you cannot have what? There's no three families.
There are. Not there. No.
What, on Lakeview and all that?
Lakeview, that's probably Res B up there.
Okay, so there's not, trying to think where A's
are. Right, but the thing is, if you go in West Cambridge, you find a lot of two-family, there are some streets
that
are three.
Oh, you know what, I'd like to look at that map you have of the over, let me go look at it. I'll do that
there,
while you talk.
Right,
okay?
So, but anyway, so there are other ideas that are being floated, which I think are really great ideas, which is that multifamily housing should simply be not only permitted, but encouraged anywhere anybody wants to build it.
Okay.
You know, at whatever the prevailing densities are, maybe a little bit of a bonus, but the thing is that the exclusion of multifamily homes, whether it's on Brattle Street or anywhere, to me makes no sense at all. You know, so that's one thing that I think would be a good improvement. Are the allowable floor area ratios in Res A, Res B, Res C1 all appropriate? I don't think so. For example, my house, maybe it's a little too dense. It's like, I think, area ratio of about 1.2 or something like that.
Yeah.
The maximum allowable is 0.75. So I'm well over the limit, right? You couldn't build my house under current zoning.
Hmm.
But there are a lot of houses of the scale of mine that actually work just fine. So maybe 0.75 isn't the right standard.
So go to this map and tell me what I'm looking at here.
All right, so this is just a picture here showing the various Res A and Res B zones.
So A is this Harvard Square around here? Yeah, that looks like
West of Harvard Square. That's definitely along Brattle Street.
What are the ones and twos mean?
There are some refinements with it, but there's Res A and Res B, different levels of density allowed.
Okay.
Like for example, out where it says A2, I think you can put a little bit more density or multifamily. I know there's some condo developments were built out in some of those there.
And then there's
there's a lot of residential B and a lot of out there. You know, west of Porter Square, west of Harvard Square. And the thing is, typically that would translate into a lot of two-family homes to get mixed in with some single-family homes, right? You know, is that good? You know, is it okay to have it at a 0.5 floor area ratio? Could it be a little denser?
Yeah, this headline says is largely infeasible. So what
right.
are they trying to say here?
Because what they're saying is under the current rules,
right.
the thing is if
you
were an affordable housing developer
yeah.
and you wanted to build in some of these ones here, you simply would not be able to compete economically to do it.
Okay.
Right? So but you could in other parts of the city.
So where I live
is
Cambridgeport. Is that C?
Largely Res C, C1. Yeah.
And the difference there is that you can have higher density or more units?
A bit higher density, a little bit more height. You know, think
right.
triple decker.
Yeah, well,
with
that's
a little
what,
bit of a lot.
Sure,
yeah,
four
and
units.
And then that can work. And even triple decker would still have to have a pretty good size.
But you do have brick buildings
do.
In these areas. Like you
right.
have, there's an
Well, the thing is that the zoning code was dates to about the 1920s.
Oh, so then.
And some buildings were built, like mine, were built before that.
Because
like
there's photos here of.
Right, and so the thing is, there were various times here, you know. And,
well, actually, this one is more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, so for example, this is an example of a house that would not possibly, it exists
right.
today.
Right, Concord at Buckingham Street.
Right.
I know exactly where
okay.
this is.
So
yeah.
if you're going out in like a Res A district, there's no way you could build that today. But
right.
it does sort of fit.
Yeah.
Right? That it's on a street corner, on a major,
right.
on a connecting road.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fair to say that there would be places where you could do this, but
right.
just basically giving kind of a blanket okay in Res B to do something of quadruple the density, I think, is not a politically feasible
not in this
right.
community.
Right. Well, but I don't think it's just a matter of NIMBY. I mean, the thing is that if you bought your two family or your single family home, you brought it there with certain assumptions, and it's maybe not exactly fair to just sort of come here and radically change. You can
well, that kind of sounds like the Brown petition thing in a way that would have affected a lot of properties that would have.
The Brown petition goes would have gone exactly the opposite way, though. It would
no,
have
but it still would tell you what you could do or would
well,
have
zoning,
to do.
So that's zoning, what
zoning does. That's true.
Right.
Right.
The thing is that, yeah. You know, in the case of the Brown petition, there yeah. they would have said, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't build to this density because, you know, if you do, everybody's going to drown. So the thing is, and this one here is basically saying, no,
yeah.
build up,
yeah.
you know. It's a little on the too arbitrary side for my yeah. taste, quite honestly.
So what are they going to do? Go back and kind of rework it or try to...
You know, I have a feeling that...
What did the nonprofit people have to say about it? Were they all for it?
Well, they're the ones who are pushing it. They're
the
lobbyists.
They're supposedly the good guys, you know? Homeowners.
You know,
are,
I mean,
right?
that's why when people raise
yeah.
some objections, they got all kind of huffy yeah. about it. You know,
yeah.
like, don't you know we're doing the Lord's work and how dear we're just putting roofs over people's heads.
Mm.
But, you know, the thing is, there's right ways and wrong ways of doing things. And I think if you're just going to sort of do something that's going to be
yeah.
very badly received, you could end up being one step forward, two steps back.
Would this
back.
Be rentals and
there are better ways.
And property opportunities to buy a home mixture? Is that what?
Yeah, it depends on what yeah. you want to do. There's no rule that can says that you can
well, like
sort of
switch houses
prescribe
you
it.
Own them.
Right, but the
but,
thing is, that, right, yeah, so... Anyway, so
okay.
it was interesting,
this is,
and
this
there'll
is,
be more.
Oh, obviously,
there are
yeah.
several more Envision Cambridge Advisory Committee meetings. They've now scheduled two more housing working groups. I thought we were done.
Well,
I have a rather strong feeling they're going to try and come back and
yeah.
and sort of
wow.
you know turn up the heat a little bit.
You put all these meetings on your site, right?
Yeah,
okay.
I don't try to do it so consistently, but I mean I'm going
to
start
doing
it a little
bit more.
Well,
I guess if you go to Envision, you can do
go
it.
To the
yeah.
Envision page
all
to
right.
find out what's up. So.
All right, we'll talk about maybe more colorful
we'll
things next
we'll come back
segment.
In a few minutes on
less controversial
on Cambridge Inside Out.
Okay, see you.